Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC, with the Restaurant Guys.
Hello, everybody, and welcome. You are listening to the Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schock. Together, we own Stage Left and Captain Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're going to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can reach us through restaurantguysradio.com, WCTCAM.com, or download our podcasts on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Hey, Francis, how are you?
I'm well. Is today the day we should tell people about our new venture?
I think we would be remiss if we didn't tell people about our new venture.
I have to say, I thought about talking about this on the show and how we were going to do it, because I don't want this to sound like an infomercial, mm-hmm. an infomercial for us, but I'm excited as heck about this. So we want to announce a new venture that has been a long in coming. We've started our own chocolate company. It's Restaurant Guys Chocolates, and there's a website, restaurantguyschocolate.com. And you can link to it, of course, from our other websites, the radio or the restaurant websites. But it began we began to develop chocolates to give away in the restaurant.
Enhance the restaurant. That was the idea, was to enhance the restaurant experience, to have something to give you at the end of your meal. Tasty morsel of something.
In Stage Left, we give away chocolates. Now, listen, if we run out, don't come in one night and be mad because the free chocolates aren't there. But you know, most nights we give away free chocolates. And, of course, Mark and I started this project, and what we forgot was that we're crazy. And, of course, so we had to come up with our own chocolates that were great. And we partnered up with some folks.
We spent some time, Francis and I spent some time trying to source chocolates. And I'll tell you, this all came from... years ago, Francis and I ate at a restaurant in Paris called Alain Ducasse together,
mm-hmm.
And they had some really delicious chocolate at the end of the meal. And then we ate at another Michelin 3-star restaurant. Do you remember the name?
Amboisie.
And at the end of the meal, the same really delicious chocolates came out.
Well, they had some chocolates were the same as in the other restaurant, and some were different.
And what Francis and I realized at that time, we found out it was a chocolatier named Michel Chaudin, who was in Paris, who was providing chocolates for most of the Michelin 3-star restaurants. So we kind of set out on a mission to find somebody here in the United States who could provide us with those kinds of chocolates.
Because every time we're in Paris, Mark and I go to this place called the chocolate shop, the chocolatier. His shop is on the Rue de l'Université mm-hmm. in Paris. And whenever anyone we know is going there, we say, I'll give you $50, bring me chocolates from Paris.
So know that if you're coming to visit me and you've recently been to Paris, that you need to stop at Michel Chaudin before you come.
Exactly. So our journey takes us to looking for someone who can supply the chocolates in the United States, and we find that it's not fruitful.
Mm-hmm.
There are some great chocolatiers here, but they didn't make exactly the kind of chocolate we wanted to serve in the restaurant, you know?
So we said, you know, we're going to have to look at this another way and maybe come up with somebody who we can team up with, who we can produce chocolates with.
Turns out friends of ours from college, mm-hmm. from the college days, manufactured chocolate on a different scale and of a different quality level, and they were interested in maybe getting together, and they have a facility, because you know, to make chocolates you need a temperature controlled room. It's a whole different sort of a setup than we have in Stage Left and Captain Lombardi, and so we've come up with our own coverture, our own set of flavors, and it's been a fascinating topic, because it really has taken, what has it taken, how many months has it taken since we actually started the process
since we started the process with these guys? It's got to be 8 months at least.
And so we've come up with some interesting flavors that are sort of signature to what we use in the restaurant. We have a roasted Austrian roasted pumpkin seed oil with a little bit of Malden salt.
Oh,
is my
so
favorite.
Good. Like it's nutty
and we have
some salt on at the same time, kind of like what you would like in a chocolate covered pretzel. That same kind
it's our own
saltiness to it. It's really spectacular.
And it's our own couverture. We purchase a couverture, mm-hmm. But we blend our own and make it. Couverture is the base chocolate that goes to make your chocolate. Everybody purchases couverture. I mean, there are mm-hmm. very few. They call them chocolate makers that go from bean to bar, who buy coffee beans and then roast them and make cocoa powder and chocolate out of them. You don't see that very often. And there are excellent coverture out there. So we have our own coverture. Mm-hmm. And what are the other flavors we have? We have the elderflower.
Elderflower is probably my second favorite. That's.
And then we have coffee. We have one called.
We have an espresso, right?
And we have El Diablo, which is a kind of a curried, spicy cinnamony.
Yeah, one. Which is interesting. And then, of course, we have the Earl Grey.
Earl Grey tea, which is with our own bergamot oil we put in there. What was interesting about this, though,
and we're developing more flavors, but those are the first five for now.
Let's see if this lies. If you guys, I hate to turn this into a commercial, but, you know, this is sort of a blog about our lives, and this is what we're doing. Go to restaurantguyschocolates.com. You can link there through our website, and give them a try. The thing that I think is interesting is we have no way we have not stabilized these at all, and we've made them very rich in cream, and the fillings are not very shelf-stable. You get about 2 weeks to eat these chocolates. And I think that's going to be the challenge.
That is definitely going to be the challenge, getting them to people. And, Francis and I are relatively new at this, but getting them to people and having the people give them wherever they're going to give them and making sure that they stay fresh from the time that we make them till the time that whoever is consuming them actually consumes them.
Because we think of chocolate as shelf-stable. You know, that Hershey bar that's been in your supermarket may have been there for a year.
Right.
But that's not exactly what we're doing. It's an interesting concept. It's a lot like coffee.
Yep.
So if you're looking for holiday presents,
I'll tell you, these will get worse every couple of days as you have them, depending on how you store them and take care of them.
And I find that after a month, you don't want to have.
You don't want to have.
They're perishable.
Absolutely, they're perishable. Definitely. That's a perishable food.
It's a crazy, crazy thing. So, but
yeah, we've gotten what have we gotten ourselves into now?
Well, you know, the other thing that's interesting about chocolates is storing them in the restaurant, because you can't put them in the refrigerator. And this is interesting for you at home. When you have chocolates at home, if you put your chocolate in the refrigerator, you can eat it right out of the refrigerator, which if you're having a Reese's peanut butter cup is actually pretty good.
But my mom used to put them in the freezer.
Also good, especially the little ones.
So
yeah.
Good.
But that's not really good chocolate. I mean, that's inexpensive chocolate. It's kind of sweet. It's got a texture. It's a little waxy, but it's yummy.
It's its own thing, yeah.
But it's not the $40 a pound chocolates that we're talking about, the best chocolate in the world. When you eat a chocolate like that very cold, like if you ate a cheese very cold, you wouldn't get the whole realm of flavor. And when you take a piece of chocolate out of the refrigerator, the freezer, you get condensation on it.
It'll start to sweat.
Which then, you know, that messes with the temper of the chocolate, and you don't want to do that.
It's not so great. So one of the places that Francis and I have found, and one of the places we store our chocolates in the restaurant, and don't come and steal them now that you know what they are, where they are, is in our wine rooms.
Yeah.
Because it's cool without being too cool, and it seems to be a perfect spot for the chocolates to just kind of stay and stay as fresh as they can.
So now in our wine room we have chocolate, we have wine, we have tomato preserves we've put up, we've got everything. So we're getting kind of crowded in there. Anyway.
We're going to need to get rid of some of the wine, I guess.
Well, so pardon the infomercial, we had to tell you about it, but the chocolates are really amazing, and if you want to pick some up, you can do that. We will start shipping them out. We're just about to start shipping them, so check it out.
Or you can come into the restaurants and sample them there too as well, or purchase them from us there.
All right, now, off the line of chocolates entirely, when we come back, we're going to talk with Tanya Wenman-Steele about her book, Real Food for Healthy Kids. It's a recipe book that will really help you plan healthy meals for a family on the go, and it's the best book of its type that I've seen. So we'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, restaurantguysradio.com and 1450 WCTCAM.com.
Hey, Francis, what's your first choice of hotel in New Jersey?
Easy question, Mark. It's the Heldrich Hotel and Conference Center.
You stay there because it's so convenient, right across the street from the restaurants, right?
I stay there because it's awesome. The rooms are elegant and stylish and comfortable. The service is slick and professional and kind. Did you know they have a swimming pool and a full-service spa?
You know you're a decadent guy, right?
I do, and that's why I stay at the Heldrich.
Well, I stay there for more practical reasons. It's right in the heart of New Brunswick, so you can walk to all the great restaurants and brew pubs and cafes and three world-class theaters. You can even catch the train to Manhattan and be there in less than an hour. And if you want to dine or have a drink in the hotel, Christopher's Restaurant and Bar is right there.
The Heldrich is also great for business. In our dining rooms, we meet a ton of people who book corporate events, meetings, and conferences there, and they're all happy. With 248 rooms, 14 suites, and over 25,000 square feet of state-of-the-art meeting and conference space, the Heldrich can do up to 450 for meetings, social events, and even great weddings.
It's only 25 minutes from Newark Airport. There's a direct train from New Brunswick and frequent shuttles. How easy is that?
To plan a meeting or book a leisurely getaway, call the Heldrich at 866-609-4700. Visit theheldrich.com or click through the link on our website, ask for the Restaurant Guys promo, or online enter promo code Catherine to get a special rate just for our listeners. That's 866-609-4700, theheldrich.com, or click the link on Restaurant Guys Radio. The promo code is Catherine. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to Mark and Francis, the Restaurant Guys. Our guest today, joining us once again, is Tanya Wenman-Steele. She's editor-in-chief of the award-winning food website Epicurious.com. She's also the winner of a James Beard Foundation Journalism Award and a regular guest on the Today Show. She's written extensively for The Times and Bon Appetit and yada, yada, yada. Real important lady. And her most recent book is Real Food for Healthy Kids, 200-plus easy, wholesome recipes to feed your kids and keep them healthy.
Hey, Tanya, how are you?
Good. Thanks so much for having me on.
Well, we told you we'd have you back on when the book came out, didn't we?
You sure did. You guys really hold your promise.
True to our word.
Very impressed.
All right, now this book is, I think, extremely useful. It's for parents who want to feed their kids healthfully, and I think it's useful for a number of reasons. And one is because I think there are a lot of people out there who don't know what healthy food is and are so used to making food for ourselves or accepting food for ourselves that's very highly processed and maybe without as much regard to nutrition, that when it comes to feeding your kids, you're trying to strike a balance between getting your kids healthy food, being able to afford to get your kids healthy food, and just, you know, knowing how to do it. And this is a pretty darn good book. It's very simply written. What prompted you to write this particular book?
Well, thank you for those remarks. That's exactly what we tried to set out to do. The real reason why I wrote the book is that my co-author and I, who is the test kitchen director at Every Day with Rachel Ray, we both have kids. We're both working moms. She's a single mom, and we both commute to and from work. And we realized when we had kids that there was no kind of comprehensive cooking tome that could tell us how much kids should eat, what the portion sizes should be, what are healthy things, how should we start them off, all those kinds of things, as well as regular secrets to, you know, getting dinner on the table in 20 minutes or less. So we literally worked on this book for 5 years and tested all the recipes over and over again and sent we came down to about 300 recipes, and we sent them out to families around the country. And we got them through word of mouth. We literally said to friends, you know, in California or New Jersey or, you know, wherever it was, like, do you have any families that would be interested in trying these recipes? And so the families would test the recipes. They would cook them, and I would get some quotes from the kids. And only the recipes that the kids loved would go into the cookbook.
So they were kid-tested and kid-approved.
Exactly. And so one of the things that I love that we did is we put quotes from the kids on some of the recipes. And the kids really ranged in age from about a year and a half to about 21. So we got some really hilarious quotes, too, from, you know, two-year-olds and stuff. So that was really one of the fun things about the book.
I will tell you, you got the Jennifer Pascal Award of Excellence for this particular book.
Wow.
It's one of about 5 books that she said, I must bring back to the house after we do the show.
Oh, my gosh, I'm so honored.
So you should be duly honored, because a lot of books have gone past our coffee table in the last 3 or 4 years.
Yeah, I have no kids, and there's no foie gras section in this book, so it's not going to
annoy. You don't know what to do with it, yeah.
Now, you know, the book is, it's one recipe per page, so there's a lot of white space in this book.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of the things I like about it, it's an easy opening book. It stays open on the counter. Why did you choose to make it it seems so much less threatening this way, with one recipe per page and a lot of white space and in alphabetical order. What made you decide on this format of the book? To make it more accessible to kids, maybe?
Well, to kids and to parents who may not feel like they're very good cooks or know how to cook. You know, honestly, one of the things that we wanted to do with this book is have a recipe that even my own husband, who honestly can make fantastic coffee and tea, but that's about it. I wanted to be able to make sure that he could make something like Yankee Doodle cornbread. You know, and also I wanted to be able to have kids, say, about 10 years old, be able to do a lot of the recipes in this book. So anyone 10 and up should be able to do a fair amount of these.
Well, and not only that, I mean, just the format of the book as it's laid out is very non-threatening. I mean, you have about 350 pages that if you had squeezed like a normal book to get the most information per page, this probably could be an under 300-page book.
That's true, and it would have been a little bit cheaper, too. You know, the full price is $29.95. But we really felt like it was important that all the information was very accessible and easy to follow. And one of the things that, again, makes us different than other cookbooks, not just for families but in general, is that we gave nutritional analysis for every single recipe in the book except for baby food. And we also gave prep and cooking time. And for the recipes that were under 60 minutes, we would give what's called a speed limit. So you knew that you could make this really fast.
Well, I want to point out to the listeners that looking through the book, on the right-hand side in the margin of every recipe, the speed limit ones are the quick ones, but here I'm looking at juicy flank steak on page 141. Mm-hmm. Prep time, 5 minutes plus marinating. Grilling time, 12 minutes, makes 10 servings. And then there's the nutritional analysis. That really is very helpful to a busy parent trying to put together a dinner.
Thank you. I mean, that's what we really wanted to do. We wanted to make sure that everyone felt comfortable making these recipes. And one of the things that Trace and I were very vigilant about doing is that we didn't put anything that's unnecessary in terms of ingredients in the recipes. And we also really tried to keep the pots and pans to a limit because, you know, I've had a lot of chef cookbooks in my life, and, you know, those guys really can use a lot of pots and pans, and who's going to wash them up, you know? And
mm-hmm.
It's good to have children as sous chefs and also as the cleanup brigade, but oftentimes it's the parents that are ending up cleaning up after dinner. And so we were very cognizant of keeping the amount of equipment down as much as possible.
You know, it's funny. We just had recently a show with Andrew Carmelini, formerly the chef of Avoce. It was a wonderful Italian cookbook out. And he was talking about how when he took this cookbook, he took all of his family experience, but all of his restaurant experience, having cooked in restaurant kitchens for Daniel Boulud and Avoce, and then he went back to his New York City apartment kitchen with his wife and went to write this cookbook. And she was like, okay, enough with the 12 pots already. You don't have a staff of dishwashers working for you.
Oh,
and
that's so funny.
He did the same thing in his restaurant cookbook called Urban Italian. He thought it was very important to look at when you're not in a test kitchen with a bunch of employees around to clean up after you, you know, how to make it in such a way that you don't destroy your kitchen by making dinner.
That's so true, and you know, that's one of the impediments to people cooking. You know, they'll say, I don't want to clean up, I just can't be bothered, and I don't blame them. You know, I get home at 6:30 every night, I'm exhausted, I'm stressed, I'm still answering email on my BlackBerry, you know, and I'm making dinner, and I'm making tomorrow's lunch for the kids. So you definitely want to keep, you know, all of that stuff to a minimum, and you want to keep your recipes as fast and easy as possible for that reason.
Tanya, I can't tell a lie. When I cook,
what?
I make a really big mess.
Do you?
Yes, I do.
You cook every night? Or?
Every time. No, well, I'm not home most nights.
Oh, he works in the restaurant business. What you need to do is bring one of the dishwashers home with you when you go home, Mark, and that would make
that
it.
Be fantastic.
That would be fantastic.
Ah, to be rich.
God.
So, Tanya, I have to be totally honest with you. When I received your book, because we had spoken a while back about the book coming out, I was really relieved. And one of the reasons I was relieved is because I had a little bit of trepidation about the book. A book came out a while ago by Jessica Seinfeld called Deceptively Delicious.
Yeah.
And, well, Francis and I made fun of the book a little bit.
We're not deceptive. Here's carrot. Eat it. It's carrot. Look, it's carrot. Eat it.
I'm going to be honest with you. We definitely slammed it a little. Now, in your book, you're not necessarily, saying there has to be full disclosure, but your book is really focused around creating good eating habits and the pleasures about good, wholesome foods and encouraging your children to enjoy those and embrace those as opposed to that particular not-so-great book that was – the idea was, well, if I hide this ingredient, my kid won't know he's eating it, so he'll eat it, and he'll get his nutrition that way.
That's so true. You know, honestly, I was personally offended by that book. You know, one of the things that we have been, that we say in the book and we try to demonstrate in all the recipes is that you really need to be a PR person for vegetables in your household. You know, you really need to sell it. You need to get kids to embrace vegetables and healthy foods and not try to hide it. And one of the perfect real-life examples of that and of the Jessica Seinfeld's philosophy going wrong is that, you know, my boys are 10. I've got identical twins because God knew I had a sense of humor, and so he gave me the same thing. And I had one of their friends came over, and he's kind of a large kid, and said to me, "Can I have a brownie?" And I said, "Oh, of course. We actually have some delicious brownies I made yesterday. They're called Mom Mom's One Pot Brownies. That's Tracy's family's recipe, and it's got whole wheat flour, and it's got less sugar and all that kind of stuff." So I gave him one, and he said to me, "Oh, that's great. Can I have five more?" Literally, he had five more. And I said, "Well, honey, you know what? Let me give you some strawberries and grapes instead. They're really delicious. They're juicy, juicy, juicy. You're going to love them." And he said, "Oh, no, I don't want that. My mom says I can eat brownies all the time because it's got green stuff stuck in there, and it's really good for me." Mm. And that is a perfect example of that philosophy taken to its, you know, logical step.
Sure, you're just going to eat brownies.
Exactly. You're going to raise kids that are terrified of vegetables, that think they're disgusting and they have to be hidden, and that you're going to eat unhealthy foods in order to eat, quote, healthy foods. That's such the wrong message. We espouse the opposite message. We really say, get your kids to eat vegetables, for instance. That's usually the biggest problem with kids. Get them to eat raw, tasty little vegetables at dinner time. That's the first thing they should eat because they're hungry, they're tired, they want to put something in their mouth, and they'll just eat, you know, mini carrots, sugar snap peas, edamame.
What's better and easier than raw mini carrots?
Exactly. And you get all those vitamins, you get the fiber, you're done. You know, I mean, so it's just very important also for parents to realize that they're models in every possible way, and eating is definitely one of them, and they should stand in front of their kids at the kitchen island or wherever they are and say, "Oh, my gosh, you have got to taste the spinach. It is so good."
I'm thinking back to that kid that came over to your house, and he needs some counseling on eating, but he also needs some etiquette lessons. Five brownies? What are you talking about? Somebody gives you a brownie and asks for five more. You give me that woman's number. I'm going to call her and get her on the radio and talk about our kid.
I never forgave my mother. I will never forget this. You know, in a different time, my mother didn't have as much at her disposal, information as at her disposal as we do now. But I never forgave her for the crinkle cut, looked like French fries, but were really carrots.
Oh.
And then she said, what's this?
Not a French fry.
She's like, "Oh, you caught me."
All right, so Tanya, I'm looking in your book, and I'm back here in this section on Pop-Tarts and jelly donuts. And I'm kidding, there is no section on Pop-Tarts and jelly donuts. No, there is a question, though. Are there, and I think one of the things that's interesting, and one of the reasons we don't know quite what to do, is because our traditional foods have been displaced, and our traditions have been displaced by highly processed foods from the market.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, our work schedules are no longer living in ethnic neighborhoods. Our the breakdown of the traditional family or the changing of the traditional family from one partner staying at home and cooking dinner and maintaining the home. So we've lost sort of a certain continuity, but in most cultures, the kids eat, until American culture, the kids eat what the parents eat.
Exactly.
Now, here we have some great food. One of the things I like about this are these are all things that when you make them, you would eat them with your kid. It's not like you have to make something different from your kid. That your juicy flank steak, your chicken enchilada, your oven barbecued beef, your chicken fried stuffing, these are all things that, you know, you would all make and then eat as a family.
Yeah, because you should not be cooking a second dinner for children. I mean, one of our rules for feeding children that we have in the book is that the diner is closed. You know, you're not making two meals. You're not a short order cook. This is what the family's eating. We're going to sit down, hopefully, and, you know, sit down together and take 20 minutes. That's all we're asking. Sit down and eat and talk about your day, and this is what you eat, you know, and it's very important. I feel like parents have really abrogated some of their responsibilities and, you know, will say, "Well, you know, they don't eat this and they don't eat that, so they'll just eat, you know, American cheese on white bread." And what they need to say is, "No, you are eating this."
Right.
The other thing
I see all the time is the not just the that I'm willing to cook for you something different, but the kitchen is open all the time.
Exactly.
So if you want to have, you know, whatever at 3 o'clock, if you say I'm hungry, Mom makes you something at 3 o'clock. She makes your sister something at 4. Mm-hmm. She makes your brother something at 5. And then wonders why no one wants to eat dinner at 6.
Exactly. That's crazy.
We'll be back in just a moment talking more with Tanya Wedman-Steele about her book, Real Food for Healthy Kids, 200-plus easy ways, easy, wholesome recipes. You can find out about this book and even purchase it through our website at restaurantguysradio.com. Back in just a moment, restaurantguysradio.com and 1450WCTCAM.com. Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis. Our guest is Tanya Wedman-Steele. Her book is Real Food for Healthy Kids.
Tanya, in your book, one of the important resources you talk about are the freezer. Mm. You know, the freezer is an important area of the home kitchen. Now, in the restaurant business, the freezer is kind of a taboo area. Very few things should be in the freezer.
In most restaurants, Mark, everything's in the freezer. In our restaurant, it's a taboo.
I'm sorry. But in your home, people need to realize that frozen food is miles ahead of processed food.
Yes.
And so you give a whole set of things that should be in basically everybody's freezer for ease of creating some of these quick and healthier meals. Can you talk to us about those?
Yes. We do have a list of 10 things to have in your freezer, and I'm a big believer in freezers, honestly, because what I tend to do is make 3 dinners or just 3 different things on Sunday, and then I freeze 2 of them,
mm-hmm.
Because that way you can just whip it out of the freezer and just heat it up really fast. So those include cooked pasta. Or you can, if you're going to use it earlier in the week, then you should just put it in the refrigerator. Homemade pasta sauce, especially if you have an abundance of tomatoes at the end of the summer, that's a great thing to do is make a whole bunch of tomato sauce, and we have a really delicious, easy recipe in the.
I mean, making a simple pomodoro it takes about a half an hour to make a simple pomodoro. Pop it in the freezer. You know, 6 months later, you pop it out of the freezer if need be.
And it's a heck of a lot better than buying that jarred sauce from the supermarket that was heat stabilized and, you know, and has additives in it.
Exactly. That's so true. And I would add pesto to that.
Mm-hmm.
Pesto freezes beautifully.
We always, I will tell you, that was something in my family. There was always pesto in the freezer.
Oh, really?
And it was added to a myriad of different things. You know, obviously we would just have a pesto sauce sometimes. But that pesto could be added to so many different things. I mean, frankly, including a can of tuna fish.
Yes.
You could, add pesto to, and you've added a tremendous amount of depth and flavor to something very simple.
That's so true. That's so true. So it's a great thing for people to do is just to make some pesto at the end of the summer. Ripe bananas are a great thing to put in the freezer because you can make instant delicious smoothies with them.
Mm-hmm. Banana breads, all kinds of things like that.
Banana breads, totally.
When those bananas are getting brown, stick them in the freezer.
Exactly,
absolutely.
That's the perfect thing to do. Either if you can't make banana bread, then stick them in the freezer.
Or banana pancakes. My family, we always make banana pancakes with the old
idea.
Bananas.
Oh, that's so good.
Now we talked before about having the whole family eat together.
Mm-hmm.
Yet you've chosen these recipes because they do appeal to kids. Are there certain foods that appeal to kids more in general, or is it just that our kids in our society have been so spoiled that their range of flavors is narrower? I mean, obviously, you know, caviar and foie gras are not in this book, not only because they're expensive, but because, you know, and calf's liver, you know, mm-hmm. is not in here because it's not. What makes something kid-friendly?
My mother told me calf's liver was good for me.
Yeah, my
grandmother
too.
I'm so angry at her.
Yeah. But what makes the selection, what makes certain kids, because obviously you put out a lot of recipes and you got feedback on some and some didn't make it into the book.
Right.
What didn't make it into the book that you thought might, and what makes these kid-friendly?
I'll tell you one thing that seemed to be an absolute no-go, except for one or two ways, is broccoli. We couldn't sell broccoli, you know, if we stood on our head and, you know, dressed as a clown. It was amazing that uniformly kids rejected a lot of our recipes with broccoli in it. So that seems to be one of those absolute, you know, items that is refused.
I will tell you the way that I get my, and I'm sorry to interrupt you, I'll let you finish in just a second, but the way I get my kids to eat broccoli is I buy frozen broccoli from the supermarket, or sometimes if it's fresh broccoli, I freeze it. And my kids eat little broccoli-sicles.
They do?
And absolutely, they eat them they eat them frozen, just the way they are.
Your kids are weird.
Wow.
But all 4 of my kids eat frozen broccoli that way.
So for normal kids, Tanya,
we actually have it. The one broccoli one we got in was a tater broccoli, which is Yukon Gold potatoes and chopped broccoli all smashed up. But, you know, the thing that I think is the most distinguishing characteristic of all these recipes that really appeals to kids is that the flavors are not over the top. They're not over spicy. They're not over pronounced, not too sharp or bitter or sweet. I mean, we're careful not to make things too sweet. I hate that. They were kind of more mellow, the flavors. Kids like things that are juicy. Kids like things that are crisp. So those are kind of some of the parameters that we used. Burnt things were not very, you know, like a delicious burnt pot roast, you know, that didn't go over too well, dried meats, that kind of thing. One thing I will say, though, in the testing of all of these recipes with these kids is that kids' palates have really, really gotten so much more sophisticated in the last 5 years. And I've been thinking about it a lot and wondering why. And I think one of the reasons is that food courts now across the country really do have, you know, Japanese, Chinese, Thai, Vietnamese, you know, all these different kinds of flavors that, you know, as kids, as I certainly didn't grow up having.
Sure, I wasn't eating a lot of ginger as a 12-year-old.
Exactly, yeah. You didn't know what galangal is, or, you know, you didn't have that kind of yam-tum soup or anything. But kids are really getting so much more used to things like that. And, in fact, edamame has become an incredibly popular vegetable for kids. So in a perfect case in point, I was in, Charlotte, North Carolina. I was flying out of there, and I was at the airport, and there was this mother with two kids, probably one was 4 and one was 2, and I was kind of watching them, you know, having my little piece of chocolate cake and thinking, wow, that's, you know, it's a little tough to travel by yourself with two little ones. And I watched her as she fed one kid ate California roll and the other kid ate a huge bucket of edamame. And they loved it, you know, and it's just, that's the perfect, you know, even in a kind of a smaller town, kids are very used to what we used to consider foreign flavors.
I don't know. I see so many kids eating mac and cheese and chicken nuggets and French fries and refusal to eat, other foods. And I think, uh-oh, you know, that's, you know, if it's not deep fried or macaroni, it's not getting.
You know, it's funny because I'm wondering if, you know, this isn't addressed in your book, but I'm wondering if there's if you want to talk about it all, the class divide in what people in different socioeconomic strata eat, but also what we know enough about and what we can afford to feed our kids. I mean, you know, I've lived in cities most of my life, and I live in a suburb now, and I can walk down the streets of my suburb and I can get there's a little downtown where I can get a smoothie and I can get some fresh fruit and I can get all kinds of great stuff. And I can go to some of the nicer restaurants and actually get some dinners that have vegetables on them and all sorts of great things. But, you know, in some of the challenged urban areas that I've lived in, you could walk for 5 blocks in any direction and you can stop in a little bodega and you can get Pop-Tarts and macaroni and cheese dinners. And
the cheapest food is the most highly processed food.
Fast food. So is it really affordable is this more affordable to follow your book? I mean, it strikes me that it would be.
It's a great question, and it's a big problem in our country. And you're right in that in the bodegas in, you know, like, for instance, Spanish Harlem here in New York City, you will be lucky to find a really mealy apple for $1, whereas you could go down the street and buy a value meal for $1 at McDonald's. So obviously, if in the poorer neighborhoods, I understand why parents feel like they have no choice but to go to a place like McDonald's because, you know, healthy food can be expensive. The good news is that places like Walmart are making, you know, organic food less expensive because they're now buying in bulk. So that's one great thing. And also, it's important to realize that if you just invest in a few pantry staples, like rice and dried pasta and you know, canned tomatoes and things, you can actually make very healthy meals for very little money. And so it's just the initial investment of, you know, whatever it is, cinnamon or chili powder or rice or couscous, but that'll stretch and it'll be much less expensive to feed your kids if, in fact, you're cooking fairly from scratch than it is to buy processed foods in the end.
Yeah, I read a statistic in your book, something like the average family has 4 meals, takeout meals a week or so, some.
Yeah.
Just, I mean, just something, some incredible number like that.
Yep.
It's just, it's just scary.
Well, one of the things that I find is that, you know, because I don't eat at home much, maybe one night a week I'll eat at home, maybe two now, you know, that I'm married, I'm trying to have some of what of a home life. But I for years I would eat one night a week at home.
Wow.
And that became expensive because when you cook at home all the time on a fairly regular basis, you've got stuff.
Right.
You know, you buy some spices, like you say, and then you use them all the time. You've got leftovers in the freezer that you turn into the next thing. And when I would invite people over to cook on a Sunday when I got my, you know, my Sunday off, I would go to Wegmans and just buy enough to cook everything for that day, and then anything that I didn't use that day went bad by the next week. But if you're cooking every day, and one of the resources in this book that I think is really great is you have a menu planner here. So you could, in the back of it, you have menu planners for different weeks in the different seasons of the year, you know, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And I think that this is really important. If you want this to be affordable, take that book, look at those recipes, plan for the week, and come up with a shopping list for the week. And the more you cook at home, the more affordable it becomes because you don't have to go out and buy that thing. You bought it last time, and it lasts for, you know, 50 uses.
Exactly. That's so true. You really do. It really does amortize, if you think of it that way.
Yeah, for years, Francis's house was basically salt, mustard, a thing of jelly.
Champagne. In the case of beer. Yeah, that's it.
You know, some Thomas's English muffins in the freezer. I was okay, Francis. Yeah. There's no milk to pour on your cereal, Francis. Well, you know.
By the way, Thomas's English muffins only freeze for about 8 months. Then you can't resurrect them. They get really hard. Tanya, your book is wonderful. Thank you for writing it. And we're going to put it up on our website so people can find it.
Oh, thank you so much. I really appreciate it, you guys.
Tanya Wendman-Steele's book is Real Foods for Healthy Kids. It's 200-plus easy, wholesome recipes. You should check it out. You can find out more about it on our website, restaurantguysradio.com. We'll be back in just a moment. The Feluga family at the Livio Feluga Winery are masters of modern winemaking, rooted deeply in Italian tradition. Founder and patriarch Livio Feluga has been counted among the 7 most influential Italian winemakers in the last 100 years. Signore Feluga pioneered the Friuli method. It's a style of winemaking that focuses on the purity of the fruit and the expression of the soil. It's made Livio Feluga Pinot Grigio the standard bearer for high-quality artisanal Pinot Grigio. It's serious, interesting, deeply rooted wine that speaks of the very essence of Friuli, from whence it comes. But with Livio Feluga, it's not only Pinot Grigio. Feluga wines offer a world of adventurous choices. Have you ever had a wonderful Ribolla Gialla or a Picolite? Well, if you haven't, then you're missing some very special Italian wine indeed. Feluga makes red wines like Verdigo, which is Cabernet and Merlot, or Sasso, which is made with the Italian grapes Refosco and Pignolo. Start with Pinot Grigio, the way it's supposed to be, and then, through the efforts of Livio Feluga, take a tour of Friuli, glass by glass, sip by sip. Ask for Livio Feluga wines at your local wine shop, or look for them online. Tell them you heard about it on The Restaurant Guys. Hey, everybody, welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. Mark and Fred.
Tanya was on the show, and we were talking about a couple of foods. She said that broccoli is one of those things kids just won't eat. And frankly, broccoli is one of the things I've had the most success with my kids eating. And again, the reason is because it's frozen. When it's frozen that way, there are so many things that they associate with being frozen, with being, I'm going to say, dessert foods or being sweet foods or being foods that they really enjoy, that I think there's a certain amount of pleasure in it being frozen, and there's also a certain amount of pleasure in the fact that broccoli, when you cook it, it gets kind of stinky, and it mixes all those flavors in. It's a very pungent vegetable. So as a frozen vegetable, it's something that, you know, I just buy it frozen from the supermarket, buy IQF frozen, and let them eat a piece of broccoli. Just like so, and because it's not as pungent a flavor, because it's not warm, is one of the reasons they enjoy it.
You know, I'm looking at this book, and I'm Real Food for Healthy Kids, and it's really well laid out. It's like a menu. They give you the menu and all.
It's done very, very well.
It refers you back to the recipes, and it's very easy.
It's done the way you would expect the editor-in-chief of Epicurious to have done.
That's an amazing website, epicurious.com. But I have my own idea for a book, and I'm wondering if I need to see if Tanya wants to get involved in making it. It's the opposite to this book. It's real food that kids would hate. It's for adults only. We begin with caviar. We have wonderful anchovies.
You gotta have foie gras. You gotta have a chicken mousse.
Wood grilled sardines. Not chicken. No.
Chicken liver mousse.
We're going high end. It's okay. Foie gras, caviar.
Oh, it's only high end.
It's high. Yeah. It's
so kids
food.
Won't eat partially because they can't afford it.
Because
unless you got a bank account, you can't eat.
It's one of the glorious things about being adult. It's kids. It's food your kids are too stupid to love. That's the working title right now, and it's got caviar and foie gras, and the brandy section is my favorite. You know, she puts a little there's a prep time, and then mm-hmm. it takes 10 minutes to do. Lighting cigars, prep time 30 seconds. You have to have the. Yeah, I like that. I'm going
to
work
on
that.
You have to have the right tools.
Yeah, I'm going to go work. Why don't we go have lunch and we'll talk about my new book.
All right, you're on.
I hope that you've enjoyed the hour listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are The Restaurant Guys, WCTCAM.com and restaurantguysradio.com.